flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It was definitely a weird... We had never had a playoff like this.
No.
We've never had... Like, college football, I saw a lot of this yesterday, that this game didn't get the hype, which, you know, I'm in Cleveland. There was hype. There was plenty of hype. Maybe in the South, there wasn't any hype, right?
I do think that I saw a lot of my friends that still live in the South that, you know, grew up down there, Alabama fans, guys that I knew in the military that are like, who even cares about this? Like, yeah, because you haven't paid attention to it for a month.
It's kind of how
it's been front of mind, right, here for a month.
Kind of maybe remember the year it was, you know, Alabama, LSU.
Yes.
Like, did anybody in the North care about that game?
No, not but really. I mean, we can get bogged because I'd like to see the ratings when they come out here later on today or tomorrow, whenever, and get into that minutia of it. I think there's a lot of emotions to play into it here. And I think that, well, you know, you said, you know, you saw it alone. All right, fine, but still your team. You still have to see what some of the reactions were. For the Ohio State fans I know, which includes you, and the reason I like it so much with you is that it's one of the things that you actually get emotional for. You don't get emotional for very much anymore. And so I enjoy seeing you get emotional and worked up and even at times shooting your mouth off about it. I can't sit here and do champions pose all day. It wasn't the hardest guarantee that anybody can make, for crying out loud.
Also,
it wasn't like it was Joe Namath.
Also, Kenny, like, I noticed this yesterday. This wasn't when Ohio State beat Miami, right? When nobody thought Ohio State could win, including most Ohio State fans. And you win a game like that, especially when Miami is planning their national championship parties and there's flyers circulating.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different, right? Or when Urban Meyer's team in the semis beat Alabama, when a lot of people were not giving you a chance and you have your third string quarterback. Last night, it was weird. You had the best roster. Well, you had, it's debated to like the penny, but you had one of the most expensive rosters in college football. You were supposed to win. It did feel differently. That part of it was different. And in the season that you lost to Michigan, right? So,
well, that's what I want to get to. Does the Ohio State-Michigan game mean less now?
So I want to say, this title for me, I've had three of them now. And four if you count the Cavs. It's getting old, guys. It's getting old winning these titles.
Yeah.
I feel like a Boston fan. But this was, for me, a distant third of the and really four of the championships my teams have won. Maybe it's because I'm older, too. You know, winning in 2002 when I was on campus, I mean, nothing will ever approach that. That was winning every game by a score, gutting those victories out, and nobody thought you could win. That will always be number one for me. And then, yeah, LeBron in Cleveland. Then this one's fourth, but it's still awesome. It's still awesome to be the last team standing and knowing that, you know, who can say anything? I mean, what, Michigan fans are going to try to say, well, you lost us. No, we still won the national championship. You were at home.
Well,
you didn't make the playoff.
I think it means less this year. I think it means less this year. It's very awkward for anybody making merchandise or anything because I don't know if you want to put the schedule on the back because I don't think any Ohio State fan is going to want to buy a schedule that shows a loss to Michigan for their national championship merchandise. So, I mean, that makes it a little bit more difficult. I think the game still matters a whole lot. If you had not won in the playoff, then it's still, you didn't win the Big Ten. You didn't win against Michigan. What did you actually accomplish? Like, you had to do something pretty tough to do to get over it. So, in the grand scheme of things, these games, the Iron Bowl, the game, they mean a little bit less because of the playoff, because of the chance. I can't deny that. But had you had not won the national championship, had it ended up being Notre Dame last night who ended up winning, I think that this culminates into you in a giant chasm of anger and frustration. So that means the game has to mean a lot. The game still means a great deal. Like, I'm not telling any Ohio State fan to give a damn or to pay 1 ounce of attention to a Michigan fan who's saying, well, you couldn't beat it. Doesn't matter. You won the championship. You won the national championship. That's the way it works. If If Pittsburgh wins the Super Bowl in a year that we beat them twice, I don't think a Pittsburgh fan's going to care.
No.
I don't think a Pittsburgh fan's going to care. So why should an Ohio State fan really care? If and it's a deeper rivalry, I get that. But why should an Ohio State fan really care? You're just going to make yourself upset and make yourself agitated.
Yeah.
A day like today, it's not to pay attention to any Michigan fan
right.
for what they may say.
Right. And I had them. I had them. They were salty last night because they certainly had the most incredible year ever. Right. Winning, beating Ohio State, then beating Ohio State again.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, like, if Ohio State loses to Michigan next year, right, and you know that could certainly happen. Right? That certainly could happen. Michigan went and bought the most expensive quarterback. They had some big money behind that. They switched him from LSU. Like, if Ohio State loses next year, I'll never get as worked up as I was this year because they proved they could go and win it.
I want to see how you feel in November next year. I want to see how you feel then. I think it's very easy now to say you won't get as worked up. What are the chances you go on a 4-game run like this again?
No, probably.
Especially the year after, because it's,
right.
once you win, it's always hard to repeat. It's always harder to repeat. So if you win this year, which you did.
The difference will be that they already got one. You know, that Ryan Day got one. I did not know when they lost to Michigan this year. I'm like, will we ever win another one again? We'll have the best rosters, but will we ever win? Like, I had that doubt. Now, they did. They went and won it this year. They went in this improbable run, you know, annihilating Tennessee and Oregon, and they win this championship. Now I can never get that worked up about a Michigan game again. I can't.
216-474-0092. Larry and Elyria, you're first up on the Fan.
Hey, how's it going, you guys? Go Bucks. Real quick, you know something, you guys? If it wasn't for the 12-team playoff, would it expand this year? The Buckeyes wouldn't even be in it. If they stayed the 4-game like it had, it'd been disappointing. I'm glad we did, but we haven't been in the playoff championship.
Well, that's without a doubt. But I think that in the game against Michigan, and this is where I think it propels you here. That loss, if you're an Ohio State fan and you're getting it from a Michigan fan or whatever, I just think you tune them out right now. But I also think that, you could say, thank you. It helped refocus us. It helped refocus Ohio State. You were a Death Star in those first couple of games, and then you ran into two teams that were quality. I mean, Tennessee has a good offense. They need a lot of help still. The quarterback needs to take another step, and you went out there and you throttled them. And they were happy. And Tennessee was just kind of happy to be there. Oregon, again, I think it's very difficult for two good teams to beat each other back-to-back in a single season, and you came out there and you were dominant from the very get-go against Oregon. Texas, you got in your own way. You still found a way to win that football game. This game, I know that Notre Dame made it a little closer than what a lot of Ohio State fans want to recognize. I didn't feel that way. I thought Ohio State would take care of the business, and that was fine, even when it got within two scores. I wasn't as worked up or bothered by any of that stuff. It refocused your efforts against tough football teams. And in that way, I mean, you could look at it as a blessing if you really wanted to. 216-474-0092. I want to know, for an Ohio State fan today, we'll get back to the Ryan Day stuff coming up a little bit later on. Well, Bobby Carpenter at 920 this morning, if you're with us later. But I want to know, does the game matter less to you now as an Ohio State fan after winning a national championship game?
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ohio State won. Lima somewhat subdued. I'm surprised he's not screaming and yelling. I thought you'd be screaming and yelling. Guy was probably doing some hooting and hollering yesterday.
Yeah, I was up a little late. I probably could have. It's tough to recapture that when you're young. Like I told you, 2002, when I watched those guys win the championship and I was on the campus at Ohio State. Like, I don't think anything will ever be that for me again. But it was still pretty fun.
Well, I don't know if this fellow who joins us right now has even gone to sleep yet. Bobby Carpenter, former Buckeye linebacker, 97.1 The Fan down in Columbus, joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Bobby, good morning to you.
Oh, great morning. Great to catch up with you guys.
So vindication for Ryan Day. Does the entire fan base quiet down now?
Maybe. I don't know if the entire is a word I would use. I try not to speak in absolutes with that because I think there is still there's a portion of the fans that are not happy with the losses to Michigan, and nothing you say or do is going to ever quell them and their desire for that. And I understand that's a big piece of it, and that matters. It's a huge deal. But at the same point in time, like, Ryan Day's a hell of a football coach, and I'm hoping that he will ultimately be revealed. He was ultimately revealed as such. And I hope that national championship answers some of those questions.
Bobby, I gave up on him and the Buckeyes after the Michigan game. I couldn't believe they lost that game. I was in my emotions, and obviously I was naive to how this whole playoff thing is going to work going forward. Can you believe that he was able to really rally the troops in the way that we have heard behind the scenes after such a heartbreaking and devastating loss?
Well, it's all right. I mean, I understand. We have a hard time with emotional regulation in society now. Everyone wants to act like my eighth grade daughter. And even if you're a grown man, it's completely understandable. So we're going to work on that. We'll get you, we'll improve upon those things. But when you have a great relationship with your players, when your team has great connectivity, and when they care about each other a lot and they play really hard for each other, then you have the ability to turn that thing around if you have the ability to, the talent and the ability to have that type of success. And that's what we ultimately saw. And you know, maybe the Michigan was a jumping off point for that. Maybe that helped it. But, it was pretty darn impressive with what they were able to put together.
I was impressed with Ryan Day in the post game. He made it about the players, which I guess I shouldn't be impressed with. It goes right with what you say, Bobby. Like, so many people saying so many bad things. Him, the whole thing about the family, everything there. And then in that moment, like, hey, Jeremiah Smith, Will Howard, you know, Cody Simon, those guys, like, he made it about the players. I think that's the difference that we don't see that the players have seen throughout these last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, they see that every day. Ryan reveals that side to them every day, and that's why they care about him. That's why they go to bat for him. That's why they have been ardent defenders of him. And I think, honestly, a lot of the reason why they played the way they did was due to the fact that their coach was under fire. And I think that was a galvanizing point and a great thing that ultimately happened to them to be able to put them in a position to be able to do that. Like, not all things success comes the easy way. And so it obviously was the hard way for them. And but that loss to Michigan probably a little fire, and the criticism was coming at their coach, you know, was the accelerant that helped get this team rolling.
What do you think, Bobby? You've obviously been around this team a little bit. What do you think of just the takeaway will be from these guys and how they were able to regroup? You know, there's been so much talk, even on the national broadcast last night. These guys, they're talking religion as much as they did. That bothered some fans when they lost to Michigan. And then when they win the title, it's like, oh, okay. Maybe that didn't matter so much. What was your takeaway about these guys?
They're great human beings. I mean, I tell them all the time when I get a chance to see them. I tell them, thank you for being the type of people you are, because it makes me proud to be a Buckeye. It's your great role models for my children. And so that makes me feel good. I'm happy about that. And people want to find ways to poke holes in everything about people. And, you know, if you're a man of faith and you're not tough, or they're not focused on Ohio State enough, or whatever the hell that, you know, excuses people want to put out there, like, there's always going to be issues that you're going to have. And when you lose, people over-examine everything. But, I mean, you can't focus on the wrong things, and the team didn't. Maybe externally people did. And that's why they were able to turn that thing around and get it pushed in the right direction.
Bobby, the defense did it again with, this time it wasn't a goal line stand, but it was a goal-to-go stand, and it was huge. Notre Dame came away with no points when they were down there and seemed to be cruising, getting their offense in gear. How is their defense able to do this time and time again this season?
You know, it's been an ethos that they've had. You know, give us an inch and we'll defend it. And I've never seen anybody kind of really embrace it to the degree that they have. And, you know, they've had it, like you said. You look at Penn State, you look at Nebraska. I mean, look at what they did against Michigan. You know, some of the stuff throughout the season, they've been really stinking good on the goal line, better than any other team I've ever seen. So it's been very impressive. These guys play their butt off. They play incredibly hard. And, you know, it's as much an attitude as it is X's and O's at that point when you get down on the goal line.
Bobby Carpenter with us on the hotline. Now, I don't know how much trash talking you did when you played, but I did have an observation just from watching from afar yesterday that seemed to be like the classiest national championship game I can remember. Both teams, I don't know if it was because if it had anything to do with Marcus Freeman, his Ohio State connections. Of course, we saw Jim Tressel, you know, there on the field before the game. Do you think that kind of stuff matters in a title game? Do you think Notre Dame needed to be a little less classy, a little meaner, or do you think that stuff just doesn't have a factor at all in these games?
I don't think that matters. I mean, you can have an attitude and have an edge and not be an ass. Like, those things, they're not mutually exclusive, and you can be tough, and you can care about people, and, you know, when the game starts, you put those feelings aside and you go play a football game. But, so, yeah, it's a big game. It's a big deal. There's a huge, huge stakes on the line, obviously, and there's that connection between Marcus and Ohio State and Jim Tressel. And Marcus, like, that's his former coach. Like, you know, and I think Jim would have wanted Marcus to win every game outside of that. And him, you know, talking, you know, the connection, I don't think that plays into it at all.
Bobby Carpenter joining us on the show. Two in a row for the Big Ten. What's it say about the conference now?
I think the conference is a great spot. I was talking to Tony Petitti, the commissioner, last night. It's the first time since 1965 and 66 the two Big Ten teams, the Big Ten's won it back-to-back. And it's the first time since 1661 that it's been two different teams that have won it back-to-back. And so it's in a great spot. The four teams that made it in did a heck of a job. One of the losses that they had was an intra-conference loss between Ohio State and Oregon. And so you look at how the Big Ten's positioned, what they're doing with NIL, and where they're at moving forward. I think they're in a great, great position to succeed.
Bobby, we know you're pressed for time. Thank you very much. Follow him on Twitter, at BCarp3. Bobby, thank you again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Bobby Carpenter, 97.1, the Fan in Columbus, former Buckeye linebacker, the Bobby Carpenter Show, the whole deal. One of our favorites, North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Yes.
Yeah, the reason I asked that question about, like, so much class, right? It's weird to see in a football game, like, we're taught, and we're fans, so we go on message boards and we cuss out other teams' fans, but we're not playing. There's nothing at risk for us. The players on the field, you know, like an Ohio State-Michigan game, there is chippiness to those games, and there has been for quite some time. And mm-hmm. You saw that chippiness, it ended up, you know, spilling out onto the field after the game. Like, it was an ugly scene at the end of that game. There was none of that for Ohio State and Notre Dame. Do you think Notre Dame needed to summon some of that stuff up?
Marcus Freeman is just so young. And I think that was probably the biggest difference. It's like, man, he's 38? Mm-hmm. 39? No, I think he just turned 39. So he's still so young, and he played in an era of modern Buckeye football and was known as a good player. So I think that Ryan Day, and I'll tell you this, Ryan Day has done a much better job of preserving history than Urban Meyer ever did. It was almost like the history goes away with Urban. It was Urban's team, that's it. Ryan Day's done a much better job of inviting the old guys back, Como, former players, inviting the old players back.
That's true. Yeah, that part of it is true. No, now Urban would invoke Earl Bruce a lot
during his era, and guys that he thought were important. But like the Jim Tressel era, like, hey, you and I know a guy who was like, hey, like, it's different all of a sudden now. Like, yes, they don't allow 100%. This. And I think Ryan Day's been much more open to, like, hey, the Tressel guys, like, you are the, and I think that was by design, because Tressel had such a strong influence on players. Like, Urban Meyer just wanted to, it's his influence now. None of these other guys around. We're going to do things differently. And
almost say he was bigger than the program.
It can't, I mean, to some level, I guess you could try to say it backfired, but I don't think it did. I mean, you win a national championship. Guys do it their own different ways. But I think Ryan Day has been much more open to the entire history, the Trussell years, all the years, and I think he invites those guys back. So I think it's made it an easier buy-in for everybody there with him. And because of that, with Marcus Freeman, there's a buy-in there with that former player. And again, James Laurinaitis was an assistant for Marcus Freeman before. So these guys all know each other.
But the reason I ask the question,
they don't want to be on bad terms.
Did it not seem like Michigan got under the skin of Ohio State?
Yes.
Did Notre Dame need to do that?
No. I don't think. I mean, Notre Dame, you were much more worried about Notre Dame than I was. That's true.
I was worried about a close game. What a close game would look like.
Notre Dame getting under Ohio State's skin, that wasn't going to help Notre Dame. Like, Lou Holtz can say whatever he wants to because he's an elderly man sitting in a suite. So that's not going to matter. Lou Holtz can say whatever he wants. The guys on the field, you need to focus on your job to beat Ohio State. And then the first drive, they did. They got the very most of what they could get out of it, and then Ohio State basically took over. I know it got closer, and Riley Leonard made some great plays, and some guys from Notre Dame made some great plays. I'm not trying to take anything away from those guys. They had to focus on their jobs to get everything done. They couldn't worry about Ohio State. Let me tell you this. What I am very impressed by with Notre Dame, if they went down, they went down their way. They play man defense, and what was it, 14 of 15 in the first half for Will Howard? And some big third down plays. Do you get that when you're not playing man? I think they tried to send some guys after him, put some heat on him. It didn't work because he was able to find guys open because he has that rhythm with his wide receivers. But they went down doing something they know how to do. If you don't know zone, you don't know zone, and you don't want to confuse your guys. You're playing great athletes. You don't want to confuse them as well. And so Notre Dame did a heck of a job in playing that defense because I thought it would be a boat racing up and down. They helped lock it down as much as they could in the second half. But at one point, you know, you're looking at 31-7. There's only so much you can do against athletes that good when you're playing zone against them, but that's what you know.
That was, by the way, that was the small little how you can have a criticism when you win the national championship after a day like that. I did say if Urban was the coach, I think Ohio State would have just flat
probably
out murdered would've. Notre Dame yesterday.
Probably would have. But I want to get to this out of here. Speaking of one of those great athletes, Jeremiah Smith, he had 88 yards receiving. He had a touchdown as well in this football game. And I told you guys I was going to play this. Well, yesterday my phone blew up. Lima's phone blew up. My mentions were blowing up after every completed pass. People have been calling in, and now the push is happening. Here's Jeremiah Smith in the postgame on Will Howard.
Just sort of the type of quarterback he is. In my eyes, he's a first-round draft pick. I mean, Will just a great leader on and off the field as well. He just had a great week of preparation, you know, just leading us to this victory tonight, I should say.
So he loves this guy. He's not a first-round draft pick, but people are considering him, and you want to say whether or not he's a draft pick by the Cleveland Browns. He's 6'4", he's 235, he's in a bad draft class. He is not a statuesque quarterback. He can get out there and scoot a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know what his top-end speed is. I have no idea. But he can get out there and move. I think he's a day-two guy. I think he answers the questions right. I think that when you have a draft class that's not that great, guys tend to push up more than they would because of the way that they played in the postseason, the way they played with a lot of pressure. Will Howard, in these postseason games, responded to the pressure. I mean, is that not the great criticism we have of so many quarterbacks in the NFL? Are you going to respond? Lamar, are you going to respond to the pressure? Again, when you're playing Mahomes, you're playing Mahomes. There's not much you can do for a lot of these guys. But are you going to respond to the pressure? Jaden Daniels, already part of the legacy, responding to the pressure 2 weeks in a row. Winning on the road again. Hostile environments, especially the hostile environment in Detroit. Being able to win on the road. Ben Johnson getting in his own way in that football game for the Lions. Yeah, I think a guy like Will Howard, I don't see him in the first round. I hate to disagree with Jeremiah Smith, but yeah, you can see him being a possibility. If the Browns don't draft anybody on opening night of draft night, yeah, I think that he'd be a conversation later on.
They started 50 games, so there's been a lot of football there.
Yep.
And he has just been incredible in this playoff run. So his stock has absolutely gone up. I mean, before the playoff, after that Michigan game, they were saying third day. You know, he was going to be a third day player. Well, that's changed. He has absolutely changed that. Plus, he's done it with everybody watching, and you keep repeating this because it's important. Poor quarterback class. So it's like, how is the quarterback at Ohio State not a guaranteed first-round pick when he wins a national championship? So they'll say it's his arm. They'll say his arm is just not remotely good enough.
But when you have a – like, if he were in the Baker draft class, you keep your foot on it, like, yeah, you're down there.
I have kept track of potential quarterbacks. I have a quarterback spreadsheet going on.
Yes.
Right now, just for, you know, Jackson, Dart, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, I just have their stats. For Will Howard, since he was brought up last week on the show, I have January 14th, Anthony Lima, and I quote, his arm stinks. Have you changed your opinion of that at all?
Yeah, I know. It's like when you're making the throws. And by the way, in the NFL.
That pass to Jeremiah.
It was great. So look like in the NFL, arm. What did we see this week in the NFL? Third and one, fourth and one, third and two, fourth and two. What do you need? A quarterback that could just go get the first down.
Yes.
Who's stopping Will Howard in those short yardage situations? I don't want to get crazy because,
Jalen Hurts took off for 40 yards and a touchdown. Yeah.
I mean, you need guys that could just go and convert that. And he seems like he's like an automatic on those situations.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to chew the fat on him, but you know, you'll get to this
level.
Seems
like a great leader, too.
And that is one of the things they're going to make these football guys. There's a lot of guys on this Ohio State team that improved their draft stock over this last month. And it's you got football guys who are going to get football guys excited, where it might not be go up on stage and shake Roger Goodell's hand. But some of these guys made themselves some real money over this last month. And I think Will Howard is included in one of them. Daryl has lived rent-free in my head over the last 2 weeks, because just because it happened for Washington and Jaden Daniels doesn't mean it's going to happen for the Browns. But, not taking the quarterback is the only way I'll guarantee it doesn't happen for the Browns. Like, it could happen for the Browns, and it could end up spectacularly as a failure in a spectacular fashion. But I can guarantee you don't have a chance if you don't take a guy up there. I don't think that Jaden Daniels is the right comparison, just saying... I don't believe we should just say, well, it happened for Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders, so it's going to happen for us. Yet, there's a way to guarantee it doesn't. And there's so many people that are right. Like, you know, you've taken a quarterback number one overall, and, I mean, honestly, we would be arguing whether or not he's overpaid. Had he stayed, we'd be arguing whether or not he's overpaid. If he is ever going to be the type of quarterback we picked him to be, is he worth a number one? But honestly, the guy's been pretty good. All right, the guy's been pretty good. We took Tim Couch. Tim Couch was ruined by an expansion franchise that had to pay the fiddler for the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Carolina Panthers doing so well, as we found out in Terry Pluto's book. Other than that, I mean, we haven't done that. We've traded down, taken a guy in draft classes, then got mad, and then blame the Browns and saying that, well, we've taken quarterbacks high. We really haven't. We really have not done that.
No, I mean, we'd waited for 22nd. Remember, we had a string of the quarterbacks that we were taking 22nd overall. It's what's interesting, Jaden Daniels, if you go back and look at his ratings when he came out, he had a lot of second-round grades, right? And that's kind of where, you know, Shedeur Sanders was until this season, until he... actually, it's probably even lower. But this season, the way that he improved, and Cam Ward as well, the way that those guys improved throughout the year has boosted up their grades. Now, I'm not talking where they'll get picked, because that's very different from the grade. Same thing, Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels got picked higher than where he was graded. That's the only reason for the comparison. Like, it's just that we kind of openly admit every year, we don't really know. This is not a science. Picking these quarterbacks is not a science at all. Look at the bust rate. Look at where they tend to go. Of course, the inflation happens every year where these guys end up not only going first round, they end up going in the top half of the first round. Really, they end up going top six.
But you started to see guys who were talked about pre-draft. We've seen them be talked about to a certain level, but all of a sudden the night of the draft comes around. Like Will Levis, people thought he was going to be a first round draft choice. Fell to the second round. Malik Willis was thought to be, by a lot of people, going to be a first-round draft choice. Ended up falling to late day two. So, there's been a little bit of a conversation to be had where guys are pumped up a little bit more than what the NFL actually thinks they're going to be. And I think we'll probably see that with this draft class coming up here. Somebody's going to pay the fiddler for it.
This is why it's tantalizing. And I hear Daryl and everybody say we don't trust Andrew Berry in this spot. It's weird. We haven't had the first round picks and haven't needed a quarterback, or at least on paper going into the draft. Hey, we've got a top pick and we need a quarterback. So it's tough to know. It's tough to know what are the odds that they get this thing right. I'm with everybody else. Like, yeah, I just haven't seen enough in the draft. But this is a unique spot for Andrew Berry and this front office and this organization. Yeah. And I just can't shake the fact that it's not just a Browns thing, guys. The league and the pundits are missing on these quarterbacks more than ever before.
Yep.
So that is what's pausing me on any of the, well, you're not just going to take quarterback just because you need one. It's like you kind of eventually do have to throw your hands up in the air on a lot of these and say, okay, I mean, we go back to Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson was no sure thing. And the Baltimore Ravens not only didn't take him with their first-round pick when they started, they traded up and got him with the second pick. They took a tight end before him, so they weren't sure about Lamar Jackson. In the end, you're never going to be totally sure. But there is one thing we're sure of. They have the number two pick.
Well, you know,
they control the strings of this draft outside of whatever Tennessee wants to do at number one.
You know what needs to happen here? Is number one, who do you think is going to go on number one overall? Do you believe it's going to be Cam Ward?
Yeah, okay, Cam.
I stopped you right there. I do not
think the Browns have a shot at Cam Ward.
Okay, if the smart money says that Tennessee, more likely than not, is going to take Cam Ward. Because I'll tell you what, if they trade out of that spot, then I think you have to ask yourself about the class of quarterbacks or anything like that. I think that might throw you off.
Or it doesn't make you think maybe they don't know what they're doing.
Who, Tennessee?
Yes.
That's a possibility. That is absolutely a possibility. You have to take that into account as well. I mean, they just hired a new general manager over the weekend.
But by the way, is what people will say with us. If we trade out and somebody trades up to go get Shador, people are
going to
say, the Browns? Browns are passing up on a quarterback?
I think for the popularity of the pick and the choice of taking a quarterback, Shador Sanders and Deion Sanders could end all of this if they just came out and said, we would play for the Browns if the Browns were to take us number two. Or Shador. Deion ain't playing for anybody. Shador would play for the Browns if the Browns draft him at number two. Because anytime Shador gets brought up, I get a laundry list of Browns fans. Who, Kenny, it's not going to happen. They already said they're not going to play here. Well, that was a tweet in March of 2018. I can't say it's a non-factor, a non-issue, until he comes out and he says it's not going to happen. Once he comes out and says he's not going to happen, I'll accept that. And then we could possibly auction off the pick if you want to. But I think if he were to come out and say, yes, if I were selected number two overall by the Browns, I would play for the Browns, I think a lot of people would change their idea of what they think of Shador Sanders. There'd still be some people who roll out and say that he's terrible. They don't like his dad. They don't like him. They don't like the hoopla. Don't invite that circus, as if this circus is any worse than the circus that we've already dealt with over the last 3 years. It's not even close. No, I wouldn't even call it a circus in comparison. But if he came out and said he'd play for the Browns if the Browns selected him at number two, I guarantee, like, and it was a statement of some sort, I guarantee the next day you and I would have a lot different of a reaction from people on social media. I think people are waiting for him to say he doesn't want to play for the Browns, that this is a mess, they don't want to get their hopes up for it. And so the safe thing is trade down, take a nice Will Campbell. Trade down, take a nice Mason Graham. Trade down to number three and get Abdul Carter if you want to. Like, that's the way a lot of people are thinking. Like, give me a player that's happy to be here, that's going to be able to play in this uniform. And if Kevin gets his way, I'm putting words in Kevin's mouth here. If Kevin is the one in charge, yeah, take your Kirk Cousins and take your guy later, and we'll get someone else. So he said that they're not going to pass up on a generational talent. You got me humming a here. They're not going to pass up on a generational talent. We got Cavs at 7:22 this morning, and whether or not Darius Garland had a choke job last night, it's going to be a tough conversation for everybody. If they take Travis Hunter, which is the way, like, Mike Garafolo took it, a couple other people took it, if they take Travis Hunter, then is Cam Ward on the docket for everybody for number two? Are we just...
Does that make it easy?
It was Cam Ward or bust, or now if Cam Ward's there, are we taking Cam Ward, or are we still afraid to take a quarterback? We have Daryl coming in tomorrow. I kind of want to call and get his ass up right now. Like, I want to know from everybody, are you willing to take a quarterback if it's Cam Ward? I like Cam Ward.
But we all
thick enough, good enough.
We all think Cam Ward is ahead of Shador, right?
I think a lot of people probably do.
He's my only option at two right now.
Yes. So if Cam Ward's there at two, you guys taking Cam Ward? It's a simple premise. Or are we still afraid to take a quarterback? Because if you don't take a quarterback, Like, there's guys later on who I can talk myself into. I can talk myself into Jackson Dart. I can talk myself into Will Howard, as long as there's a veteran there that has been traded, or excuse me, signed in free agency. I don't know if you can really trade for many of them, but, you know, I'm open to possibilities here. If you brought in a Geno Smith, even if you brought in leftover pot roast Kirk Cousins or somebody else, you mentioned Derek Carr. Okay, Derek Carr. Derek Carr's fine. All right, as long as there's a veteran there. Cam Ward, it's going to be harder to do. I would still like a veteran there. I'd still like to start the season off with somebody else. But it's going to be harder and harder and harder to say that Cam Ward shouldn't just start the season. So if you take that guy number two, you know what comes with it. It's easier to pussyfoot around the situation later in the first round or in the second or third round. Let me go to Ed in Erie, Pennsylvania. You're first up on the Fan. Hello, Ed.
How you doing? Hey, I want to make four quick points, okay? Number one, why is the Baseball Hall of Fame still think it's the dead ball era? You know, players play for two teams, four teams, six teams. Why?
Wait a minute. Let him get his other eight points in.
I'm very passionate about
you
the Baseball Hall of Fame.
You can tune into the Ed and Erie show any day over there.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't make the rules. Ooh. I'm sorry.
Ed, would it hurt you to talk about the Browns like we are right now?
Point number two, Cleveland State's won 11 in a row, and let me tell you, it is going to be a
God in heaven, a sweet team music.
Be you too.
Australian Open heating up. What happened to Coco?
God in heaven, a sweet team music.
He would have got the Cam Ward had you allowed him.
Oh, really?
Eventually.
I want to agree with him about the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think I would have agreed with him with the Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, you're allowed to get a couple things in there, can't you? 216-474-0092. So is the official show stance now just taking Cam Ward?
I think so.
I mean, I've had it out of my mind so much that I've started to argue about Shador Sanders and his dad and whether or not he'd come here. And, I mean, good God, this is just how not great of a class it is and how not great of a year it is to need a quarterback. Is yesterday, I mean, I brought up Will Howard. People started going, you can't take Will Howard number two overall. I go, I didn't say take Will Howard number two overall. That never once came out of my mouth. I said by the end of the draft process, he could be a second-round guy, or if he's a second-round guy, he could go, well, do I want a fifth year on him? Am I willing to trade from that 33rd pick up into the back end of the first round to get a fifth year on him? That I was willing to ask. But this draft class is so crazy and so not good at it's left us all with a lot of questions, and I think a lot of people, they don't want to be left holding the bag. Because I do think, and this is where Daryl comes into this, and he's in my head on a lot of this stuff, I think everybody just assumes that this is the final year of Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, and it's a lame duck year right now. And I don't think that Browns fans want to be left holding the bag for some rookie quarterback that they weren't really actually that hot about in the first place. So they can go out and get Kirk Cousins. You know why? Because you don't love Kirk Cousins. It doesn't matter to you about Kirk Cousins or anything like that. You're probably, more than likely, you're not going to fall in love with that guy. You can go out and get somebody else, and that's okay. And then if you get like Will Howard, all right, I like Will Howard. He can be a mid-round guy. We'll take a swing on him. If it doesn't work, whatever, add him to the list. Same thing with Jackson Dart. It's not the same risk you would have. It's like, whoa, Cam Ward's available here at number two, and I got 10 minutes to make this decision here all of a sudden. Now we're up against it. Now I got to throw, do I trust the coaching staff? Do I trust the general manager? Those are two things that are very, very hard to answer, and I don't think I want to take calls on that. Do I believe that he is the right guy for this, or am I going to be left holding the bag if this guy doesn't work out on another draft class that we might miss out on because everybody wants to say that next year's draft class is going to be so much better? I want to wait to get there, but that's going to be the main thing that's said. So you have a lot of decisions to make, and I'm thinking, well, hey, if Cam Ward's there, damn the torpedoes, go ahead and take Cam Ward. I mean, I'm willing to take Shador Sanders if Shador Sanders is willing to play here. I know what comes with it. I understand that, but I don't want to be in this position again. I don't need to be in this position again. I got to give myself a fighting chance. I'm not going to use Washington as an example. I agree with Brian Baldinger. I don't think you can just take Jaden Daniels and make another Jaden Daniels and put him in Cleveland. But I know the only way out of this mess, and it is a mess, is going to be to take a quarterback or we're just shouting into the wind.
Kenny,
and we're going to waste each other's time and
lifetime. You, over the years, I know you've started your new offseason list.
Tracker, yeah. I'm up to two pages now. I'll put that out.
Well, you've had the tracker. I do think we need to hear it at some point, but In the past, didn't the tracker prove one thing, that everything being said right now doesn't matter? Doesn't matter. That GM saying that, or the new guy making the choices with Tennessee, him saying that is only designed to throw everybody off the
set. But that's going to spur conversation, because if he's there, maybe he is going to be there. Maybe I think, honestly, it's to entice somebody to trade up to go after number one. We're open for business. Whether that be the Giants, whether that be the Raiders, somebody else, I don't know how much you're going to give up for Shador Sanders. Maybe that's an enticement. But you're still sitting there at number two, and if they're trading up, they're probably trading up to take Shador Sanders. And so if they're going to trade up to take Shador Sanders, then fine. Cam Ward's part of the conversation. Because it can't just be no quarterbacks. There has to be an opening there. And I think so many people, it's been convenient for them to go, well, Cam Ward's not there, so hell, let's trade out of it. Okay. Troy on the road. You're first up on the Fan. Hello, Troy.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Good morning.
Morning to you, friend. Go ahead.
I'm okay with a Cam Ward, Shador Sanders pick if you know they're in love with the guy. Shador, obviously, if he's willing to come here. Me, if it was like Madden and I was in charge of what's going on, I think I'd like to go the free agent route and then draft, you know, a Dart or a Howard in a later round and go with a Mason Graham or Abdul Carter with that earlier pick, maybe. And maybe it's a homer pick, but if, you know, in the second round, maybe a Jack Sawyer. But what's your thoughts on the name of Carson Wentz as like a veteran free agent? Not a name really people bring up.
You know, I've heard so many bad things about him being poisoned, Troy.
Troy, if you were looking for, and as somebody who is a big Carson Wentz fan early on his career.
Well, you know your quarterbacks, don't you?
If you are looking for someone who comparatively may have had a worse drop off than Deshaun Watson in their career, you found him with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, a lot injury prone for sure, but just a thought, because we're basically essentially just throwing darts at the dartboard, you know.
Did you say Jackson Dart? Is that who's next?
He's not bad. I just worry about, you know, Lane Kiffin. By what I've read, kind of would pretty much tell him his reads for the most part. But
did the same thing with Watson. Well, I mean, when you have like if they take a guy later on like Jackson Dart, Troy, thank you very much for the call. You take a guy in the third round of this draft, it's like, hey, let's. He might be the best natural quarterback. He might not be the most ready. And you're going to hear me say that a time or two coming up, getting ready for the season. Because you're going to probably take a guy. If you go that route, we did this like crazy with Deshaun Kizer. And you and I got in screaming matches with each other. Because nobody wanted to understand the difference between best on the roster and most ready. He wasn't ready to play, and they put him out there, and he sunk his own career, and they helped do it. He wasn't ready to do it. And on that roster, by the way, that quarterback room won a great quarterback room anyway, so being the best of that quarterback room really wasn't saying anything. For him, for Dart, or for Will Howard, it's like, hey, take some time here. Take some time. Prepare. Get ready to play. You're going to play at some point probably this season, but if you go out, you get a Cousins. Cousins knows the score. Derek Carr should know the score. They should be competitive in the fact that they want to go out there and win and compete and maybe even hold on to the job. But until that moment, you know what's going to happen here. Carson Wentz, I just keep hearing so many things about him being poisonous. I really don't want a part of it. Bobby and Willowick, got to go quick, but go ahead.
You know, we got to get a veteran quarterback, a Colin Kaepernick or something, draft someone from college. You know, listen, we went after Deshaun Watson. Look what happened to that. We can't get any worse. But, you know, Kenny, I agree 100% with you, buddy.
All right, Bobby, thank you very much for the call.
Wait a second. Is there
at least he was in football and not talking about dead ball Hall of Fame?
I do genuinely wonder. Remember, people used to call Jeff Sindelar, and
it's a good item.
And they would reference their buddies and ask Sindelar whether those guys should get a call up or whether the baseball card of that guy is worth anything. And Sindelar, I mean, I love him, RIP, but he would just BS his way through the answers, right? On a lot of those guys. Is somebody out there? Is somebody urging random fans to call shows all over the country to mention Kaepernick? That's the only way that Kaepernick would still be brought up.
Like a national.
Yeah, is it a joke? And they're going to play that recording on their show somewhere else, like the Ba Ba Booey calls back in the day for Howard Stern.
Yeah, but you and I love that type of craziness so much that we would love to be included in a master.
He last played, Colin Kaepernick last played 9 years ago.
I mean, that was before my son was born.
He still gets
the last
called.
Time we had arguments now, about Colin Kaepernick was now, when he was an infant.
Now, Teddy Bridgewater took a snap.
My son, not Colin.
Did Teddy Bridgewater just take a snap in a playoff game?
Yes.
So, I guess all things are possible.
And they scored a touchdown on that play.
That's how badly people don't want to play Deshaun Watson this year. They're willing to go back to guys who retired 9 years ago. Or didn't retire, I should say, but haven't played in 9 years. Did not retire. Certainly didn't. But have not played in 9 years. Teddy Bridgewater. Can we bring in Teddy Bridgewater? He did take a playoff snap. Lord Almighty.
We're all kind of on the same page. You want to talk a little Cavaliers?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it.
Sorry, the coffee pot was blocking the mouse for me to get to Danny. Danny Cunningham is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. You know him and love him because you hear him on the air here. Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, the inside shot on Substack as well. Morning, Danny. Thanks for waking up, man. Appreciate you.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
We're good. He's killing me. I made a pot of coffee here, and it's not very good. It's just, it's okay.
What did you do wrong?
I it's just watery. It just tastes a little watery.
He keeps trying to come getting better as the morning's going on, Danny.
It's all the about worst. The creamer.
Come on. Don't be that guy. Just accept that it's bad if it's bad and move on.
It's not. I'm just telling you, I've had bad coffee before, and I've had coffee that has literally put hair on my back. And this is, it's just not that. I can't explain it. It's not.
It doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I didn't get the good mix, that's all. Like, I should have gone in there, and they had pretty good creamer. I brought that in, which is special, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop. So then, I didn't get a good stir in there, and so it got a little watery on the top. That's all I'm saying. I mean, like, these guys are going to hold this against me forever as, like, the worst coffee guy ever. But I'm not.
Yeah, I would for sure. I would definitely make sure to do that, because once you make a bad pot of coffee, there's no coming back from that.
Yeah, you know when you're describing it as watery and not that bad, that's not a ringing endorsement to drink Andy Baskin-made coffee.
But the good part about it is actually, I'm going undercover. It's really good, and I just don't want Daryl to have any, because Daryl,
I'm not going
to
drink it anyway.
Daryl without caffeine is bad enough. A little caffeine and Daryl, really, really bad.
I've actually cut caffeine out of my diet. You'd be surprised. This is just natural energy.
That is great. Danny, can we talk about the Cavs for a second? Donovan Mitchell, he's going to be a starter. Your thoughts on that? And look at that. Kenny could be his coach. Kenny Atkinson could be his coach on one of the three teams that isn't the Rising Stars.
Yeah, so I mean, Donovan, I think, is a very deserving starter, and he finished second in the fan vote behind LaMelo Ball, who is not named a starter. Donovan was first in media vote, first in player vote, and I think it's really cool that he gets this honor, considering that this is, by like counting stats, not the best season of Donovan's career. But I think if you watch the Cavs, you know that he still, at least in my opinion, has been the best player on what has been the best team in basketball, and he has willingly taken a step to the side so that Evan Mobley can elevate his game, so that Darius Garland can get his game back to playing at an all-star level. And I think that this is sort of a recognition of him saying, okay, you know what? I'm a really great basketball player, and I can go out and I can score 30 points any given night, but winning is going to be the thing that matters most to me this year, to the team this year. And I think that all of that is being reflected with him being named an all-star starter. Second time it's happened for him. I think it's a very deserving honor for him.
Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen, in my view, all deserving of all-star recognition. What are the odds all three make it? And if they don't, which one do you think gets snubbed?
So I think if they don't, it will be Jarrett Allen that doesn't make it, although I do think there's a path for him to make it. And the way that the reserves work is there will be three front court player reserves selected, two guards, and then two wild card spots. Evan Mobley is a lock, and he is of the three front court starters in the East, Karl Anthony Towns, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Jason Tatum, all three deserving guys. Two of those guys got 95 media votes, which is how many media members voted on this. Karl Anthony Towns got 91. Evan Mobley got the other four. No one else got a media vote to start other than Evan Mobley and the three guys that are starters. And I think that is something that is going to align with how the coaches, because those are the guys that picked the reserves here. I think that's going to align with that. So I think Evan is very safe as a first-time All-Star. Darius is interesting because the guard position is loaded in the Eastern Conference. But I just mentioned that media vote with Evan. Darius finished third behind Jalen Brunson, behind Donovan Mitchell. He was the next guy. He finished, I believe, tied for fifth in player vote, which is definitely a little weird. Like, there are guys that don't actually play NBA minutes, that get votes from other players to be an all-star. So I just think that's kind of silly. But I think that both of them will ultimately be an all-star. Jarrett has a path because if there are only three front court players that are selected, Evan Mobley is a lock to be one. I think Boston's Jaylen Brown is a lock to be one. And then you start going down the list and it gets real thin real quick. Like Paolo Banchero was next in the fan vote. He's only played, I believe, 12 games. Franz Wagner, who when he's been healthy has absolutely been deserving of an all-star appearance, but he's only played 20 something games after he just missed 4 weeks with a torn oblique. Like, I just wonder if they are going to reward Jared and the Cavs team's success here, partially because he deserves it, but partially because who's the next best option to be a front, that third front court spot?
It's a good question. It's a good play. Yeah, I hear you. Danny, let me just switch gears just a little bit more on this All-Star stuff. What do you think of this new format?
I don't necessarily love it. I think that if the All-Star game is going to work, it's not going to be because a format changes. It's not going to be because they found this cool new wrinkle. It's going to be because the guys care. And if the guys don't care, it doesn't matter what you do on Sunday night at All-Star weekend to make the game try and work. It's not going to work. It's about getting a buy-in from the players. I just don't see how this format is going to do that. And you know, we have had years where it's been good. We have had years like last year where it's been kind of an embarrassment. And I just think that unless the players really buy in and unless they care and unless they treat it like something that is just even a little bit closer to a real basketball game other than a let's just shoot 100 three-pointers and dunk and that's it, until that changes, I just don't see how it's going to be good no matter what the format is.
Danny Cunningham, Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, Inside Shot on Substack, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Danny, Cavs back at it tonight. They've got the Sixers. The Rockets come to town Saturday for a rematch. Cleveland 3-3 in their last six games. When do we hit freakout mode?
If they start losing games in April in the playoffs, like this is, I mean, they've lost three games out of their last six. And I just, especially when Evan Mobley's not playing the way he did not play in the game against Houston the other night. Like, I just think that this is such a different team when Evan Mobley's not on the floor for any stretch of time. And I think that, you know, the Cavs have gotten off to such a great start and they've been fantastic. And they were never going to continue, at least in my opinion, playing at a 73 win pace the way that they were, but they still have the best record in basketball. They've built up a good cushion. You know, I don't know if you've necessarily been paying enough attention to the rest of the league, but like Boston is 10-10 in their last 20 games. And I think people are starting to have worries about them, but The fact that the Cavs are 3-3 in their last six, I just don't find that big of a deal. Like, could they have won against Houston the other night? Sure. If Darius Garland makes those free throws, they win, but you probably look at that game and say, you know, I don't know that the Cavs deserve to win that one because they didn't play very good for the first three quarters. I think that defensively is where they need to get better. And then, you know, there are nights like Wednesday night in Houston where they have an off night offensively where I thought they missed a ton of open shots. I think they shot like 31% from three or something like that. And when they do that, when they don't have a good offensive game, when their defense is not at the elite level that we're used to seeing it be at, well, they're going to end up losing some games. And that just sort of happens. If this were happening, if they were playing like this, you know, 2 weeks before the playoffs, might be okay, this is going to raise an eyebrow here. But the fact that it's happening in the middle of January, I just don't find to be a big deal.
You mentioned the Warriors' 73-win pace. Cavaliers starting to fall off that. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, do you?
No, I don't, because this is such a long season. And as long as the Cavs get the first seed in the Eastern Conference, I don't think it matters what their record is. Now, I say that, and if they get the first seed in the Eastern Conference and they win like 52 games and play at a 500 level the rest of the way or slightly below that, then yeah, that might be an issue, but this is a team that is on pace to win 60 plus games. If you check out all the betting sites, the live total for wins for them is like 63 or 64 and a half, depending on where you look. I do think it's important they finish with the first seed in the Eastern Conference, potentially the first seed in all of basketball, because when the playoffs arrive, I think the Cavs are really going to want any game one that is played to be at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, and more importantly, any game seven that is played to be played at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse instead of, in particular, TD Garden in Boston. I think that is the really big deal to watch out for. But the way the Celtics are playing, the Cavs have such a big gap right now. I'd be very surprised if that doesn't happen. I will say, you know, I do think that the franchise record for wins in the season, which is 66, set in 2008-2009, I think that's in jeopardy. But I think if they beat it, it's probably 67.
Danny, I want to go back. Like, there were the missed free throws, and I feel like anything we say negative about this team, and I'm not trying to be negative at all, is nitpicky because it's been such a great season. It's been fun, but the thing I really like about this team is that you can go back and look through, you know, just a sheet, and it'll tell you who the leading scorer was, and it's either Garland or Mitchell or Mobley or Allen. Like, and it rotates all the time, and I think. Like, I think that's super important because they're playing team basketball. The thing that kind of got me at the end of the game the other day was you can see where guys sometimes want to go back and play a little bit of hero basketball at the end. And I'm not saying that that's a trend, but the thing that makes this team great is their ability to move the basketball. Any concerns or thoughts about that when we get into clutch time or we get into a seven-game series, that hero ball mentality, and I'm not saying that guys are doing it on purpose. I think that's just the way AAU and the way that they've come up through the ranks, this is kind of what guys think at the end of the game sometimes. But any concern about that? Because the hero ball is not what has gotten them to where they are right now.
No, because I think that what they did offensively, well, I agree with you, like the end of game offense against Houston was not very good. Mm-hmm. But I think that the way they look at the end of that game offensively probably looks pretty different if Evan Mobley's on the floor. Like, sure. I just think that the ball moves a little bit better. And I'm not like you're right. It wasn't a good enough, despite the missed free throws. Like, even if he makes those free throws, the end of game execution was not great. But I just think that I don't want to necessarily judge what their end of game offense looks like when in a game that Evan Mobley wasn't there and they didn't play very good offense in terms of shot making throughout the entire night. So I just think that, you know, yeah, you can nitpick, and when they are 36-7 the way they are, anytime you say anything that's less than complimentary, it is a little nitpicky because they've been so good and there just aren't very many negative things to say about this team. But I just think that the end of game offense is going to look better with Evan Mobley on the floor, because think back to the game they won against Oklahoma City and Cleveland. How did the end of game offense look like then? You know, Evan Mobley is the one that scored arguably the biggest basket of that game, and that not have him available, I just think changes how they look.
Cam Johnson seems to be everyone's favorite for the Cavaliers to target at the trade deadline, which, by the way, is rapidly approaching February 6th at 3 p.m. How do the Cavs pull that off?
I think if they were to pull that off, and I don't expect them to, because I think that ultimately they will get outbid by a team that has more first-round picks available. I think that they would have to trade their 2031 first-round pick, which they cannot put any protections on because it is so far into the future. So they'd send an unprotected 2031 first-round pick. I think Jalen Tyson would probably have to be part of that package, because the Cavs would have to tell the Nets that Jalen Tyson, who the Cavs believe has a bright future, and I certainly like as a young player, they would have to convince the Nets that, hey, he's just as good as a first-round pick, and then they'd have to find some other pieces throughout the roster that match in terms of Cam Johnson's salary, which is around $20 million. I think ultimately, guys, though, there are teams that have been linked to Cam Johnson that have multiple first-round picks available, and the team I look at is Oklahoma City. I don't know how bad Oklahoma City wants Cam Johnson, but if they want Cam Johnson bad enough, Cam Johnson's going to be a member of the Thunder, because they have, I believe, like 20 first-round picks that are available to be traded because of the moves that they made during their rebuild, including one with the Clippers where they acquired, I think, 7 first-round picks and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander for Paul George. So I ultimately think that are the Cavs interested? Sure. Who wouldn't be interested in a guy that's 6'8" and a 43% three-point shooter and a good defender? But ultimately, I just don't think that there's enough left in that war chest of draft assets for them to be able to swing a trade for him.
Danny, as always, appreciate the conversation. Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, and, of course, the Inside Shot on Substack. Thank you, Danny.
You got it, guys. Have a good day.
All right, have a great weekend.
Audio courtesy MLB Network. Got something to say about that promo we just played before the show. That's coming up at 6:40 already off the top of my head. So I congratulations to CC. That's a fantastic thing for CC Sabathia. That's all great. I found a new and exciting way to be mad at Major League Baseball yesterday. And I don't know if you agree or disagree or how you're going to feel about this. I came to a realization yesterday because I'm watching, and we all had the feeling he was going to go in as a Yankee, and he's going to go in as a Yankee into the Hall of Fame. It's going to be him, and Billy Wagner's going into the Hall of Fame, and Ichiro Suzuki's going into the Hall of Fame. More on him in just a moment. But CC's going into the Hall of Fame, and there was we knew he was going to go in as a Yankee, and I go, man, the only thing we can do, like I saw the stuff going down from the Baseball Hall of Fame, the reposts of the social media well wishes. Like I saw the Miami Marlins wished congratulations to Ichiro Suzuki. The Brewers wished congratulations to CC Sabathia. Go, that's all we have left now, isn't it? We just glom on to other success. Because we don't, I go, the next guy we're going to have, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And it might have hit me before, and then like you know, you forget these things after a moment because this gets brought up in January. Jose Ramirez is going to be the next, and if baseball keeps going, last Cleveland Guardian to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, he's on trajectory to go to the Hall of Fame right now, and when he gets in, he'll be the last. I don't know, first ballot or anything like that. I don't think so. But he'll go into the Hall of Fame, and then that's it. That's it. That's all we have. He'll be the last one. He'll be the one with the C on the hat. And then that'll be it. And all we'll be able to do is glom on to other guys when they go in as other players. Like, I didn't realize they don't officially do that in the NFL. Because I was going over Myles Garrett's career. And I go, man, it's like him and Len Ford are the only guys who spent the bulk of their careers with the Browns who are defensive players. And if you can find me somebody who knows Len Ford right off the top of your head other than me, congratulations to you. You know some Browns history, or you are an older listener, my friend. So it's either him or him that go in as Browns. I go, well, they don't really go in as, like, the Browns can claim 23 different guys, but there were guys who started their careers in Cleveland, ended with the Bears, such and such. You know, you get what I'm saying. They don't do it like that. In baseball, you go in as a member of a team. And we heard the Wade Boggs controversy a couple of years, well, not a couple of years ago, but some years ago. And it just hit me. I go, well, that's all we have left is just to glom onto their success and go, well, he started his career in Cleveland and he's thankful he was here in Cleveland and that's great. And we get to bring him back every now and then. But he goes in as a Yankee. He won a World Series with the Yankees. He spent most of his career with the Yankees. And that's all I can do is just deal with it. Every great player. If Travis Bazzana becomes a Hall of Famer, guess who he's going in as? Ain't going to be a Guardian. Paul Skeens over there in Pittsburgh. All you Pittsburgh guys out there. Paul Skeens will probably go to the Hall of Fame. Guess what? Probably ain't going to go in as a Pirate. Probably will go in as a Yankee or a Met or a Dodger if this all continues.
But do you think?
And I go, Major League Baseball, and I know you've heard it so many times, you'll roll your eyes at it. I found a new way to be angry at Major League Baseball.
Do you think the average fan cares about the Hall of Fame these days?
I think the average fan...
When I was young, the Hall of Fame was a huge deal. There were pilgrimages out to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
There was the man, if you were a little league player and you got a chance to play in Cooperstown, and I'm curious because I'm so far removed.
Well, you
now.
Don't like Hall of Fame anymore. I think they do. I think they do care.
Is it a big deal to the casual fan? The diehards, well, yes, they're always gonna care about that stuff.
This is what a Hall of Fame is supposed to be. You are supposed to get a man of a certain age. I'm just going by demographics here, a fan of, you can be women too. A fan of a certain age to reminisce, because it's supposed to be for the fans. Baseball waved bye-bye to that years ago. It's supposed to be for the fans. So it's a celebration of that player's career, and fans get to go remember them. So they get to go take a trip down memory lane. And so they get to go see that player enshrined, or they get to see that player at the Hall of Fame, and they get to take their kids. So it's like this carrying of torches, passing of torches, from one generation to the other with fans. Now, I know that very well because I'm from Canton. I know the people who work down there. I mean, that's the whole thing of what it's set up supposed to. That's the whole thing of what it's set up to supposed to be, is that fans come in from all over. It's a convention of fandom in August. You get to see your favorite players enshrined, all that stuff, and then you get to tell stories about how great that player was, even though some of the people that go in, I mean, the kids are old enough to see them play. Because they're first ballot Hall of Famers. But in some cases, you didn't get to see him play. Their dad got to see him. They get to tell him stories, and it's just another way to cement the fandom in there. Well, you aren't going to have that anymore. Because if I only have Yankees fans, well, New York is just down the road from Cooperstown in comparison. The Mets are just down the road from Cooperstown in comparison. I guess you got Dodgers fans that could fly in if they're really that passionate about it. And then that's it. Do I really... The thing that ties me to the Hall of Fame this year is if I were that big of a fan that had the means to go see it, is that I could see Guardians fans going to see Tom Hamilton give his speech.
An announcer.
a play-by-play broadcaster. Yeah. And I'm not in that is no way being nasty towards him, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, it's just kind of fun. Hey, why are you in Cooperstown? Oh, I really like Tom Hamilton.
Yeah. And maybe that's it. Maybe you'd like to see that.
That is a sad state of affairs for the sport you're not going there to see the guys that truly uplifted you and made you feel like you were a kid again.
If there's like a Jeff in Eastlake and he's like, well, this is one of the few times I'm going to get to go to the Baseball Hall of Fame and see a Guardians person inducted into the Hall of Fame. Go right on ahead. God bless you, because you only get him and you get Jose Ramirez
What do we do with Tito?
Maybe he goes into the Hall of Fame as a Cleveland Guardians manager, except
he won his World Series with the Boston Red Sox. But he managed, what, four more seasons in Cleveland and had sustained success for a long period of time?
I don't know that that's a debate. He broke the curse.
Great.
For the Red Sox.
Awesome. So our most successful manager... Is someone else's manager. Great sport you got there.
Even though he did win his Coaches of the Year with... Cleveland.
Come on, he had the hardware.
Great entity you have there.
He broke the curse.
All right, well, you guys better hope Stefanski gets it turned around, because we got the two-time Coach of the Year, and he better get into the Hall of Fame.
Will he go in as a Brown?
Of course, it doesn't matter about that. We'll have Myles Garrett at some point. Well, I would certainly hope so he would go in as a Brown.
We don't know. He's young. We don't know where the next 20 years of Kevin Stefanski will end up after this year.
You don't feel that... That's part of the problem, too, is I'm... Owen kind of, I think, gets it, but no offense to you. You gave up on it a long time ago.
Yeah,
and there is part of the problem with Major League Baseball. I got a sports host in Cleveland who cares about his teams, and he doesn't care when I bitch and moan about the Hall of Fame. And maybe some people driving don't care either. I got to get it off my chest.
Baseball was my first love.
That's terrible.
Was the only thing I cared about for the first however many years of my life.
I think our generation, that's all we did. I mean, we grew up with the home run chase. It was... Yeah. And fish in a barrel.
And that will be seen as the pinnacle of the sport. For other people, it's somehow the shame and humiliation of the sport, the steroid
ego.
But it was awesome to watch. And then, you know, kind of every year, the only thing that kept me in it at all was that Cleveland always had competitive baseball teams, you know, for such a long period of time.
And they have competitive baseball teams now.
They do. It's just like... Last week, we didn't talk a lot about what the Dodgers did at the end of last week and over the weekend, but it's like every other day there's a new Dodgers story about the money. And I've said this before, like, you know, the off seasons, we get really into off seasons here for the Cleveland Browns and for the Cavs. They have made some huge moves, you know, over the last 10, 15 years where you have hope every year, no matter how good a team is, how bad a team is, no matter how right or wrong you are about a team. The Guardians and baseball in most of America these days, it's about having fun watching your team if they're good, and we've been blessed. We've had a very good team, you know, for a long period of time now with the Guardians. That's what the regular seasons are for with the Guardians. And then you get into the postseason and you hope. You pray that you go on a magical run. We were able to do that in 2016. This year there were some times where you're like, hey, could this be the magical run? And then in the end, it isn't, but it was a satisfying year, I think, for most fans. But the off seasons, you're never going to have hope and get excited about in a market like this. It's just, and I don't care who the owner is either, by the way. I don't think that will matter. I know that people will do it
totally
and move
agree.
Heaven and earth to move to the next owner. The next owner will give you disappointing off seasons as well. But
No. My prediction is he makes a splash at the beginning. Yeah. He makes a splash at the beginning, and then that's it.
But that's all I'm saying is, I am resigned to the fact, as I think most baseball people are, unless you're in New York or L.A., I'm resigned to the fact, even in Boston, the last 4 years, they've been resigned to that fact that this sport is not going to give you any joy in the offseason. It's only going to be how your team does in the regular season, which is a very long regular season, so you'll get joy out of that. The other sports do so much better giving you joy for longer
that's
periods.
That's half the reason I got mad at I got mad at Daryl. I'm going, well, Daryl, do you want to sit here and talk about the guys that great, hooray, we got rid of Miles Straw. Is that something to get into with you?
Yeah, even,
is that what you want to do?
By the way, even the way you have to be a baseball fan in a market like this, you have to understand so much more than what I think most casual fans are willing to digest, that you have to understand all these other ways to acquire players and how guys are doing 60, in the minor 000, leagues.
$60,000 contracts for the international players.
Right, right.
You have to understand that. You have, just like you said, you have to get into the farm system. You have to, like, thank God Lake County's close. Thank God Akron's close, because it's like, all right, you hear a little bit of it. And there's guys who do a good job with the farm system here, but it, like covering the farm system. But you got to dig deep where any goofball Mets fan out there, well, who's batting third? All right, and he'll bat third tomorrow, and he'll bat third the day after that, like it used to be. Yeah. So there's baseball hasn't changed for those fan bases since we were kids, and so it's easier to be in tune with that. But yeah, it was a sobering thing to realize, like, all right, CC's going in. I know he's going to go in as a Yankee. Okay, officially goes in as a Yankee. Great for CC Sabathia.
So we'll just have to wait for him to say a few nice things about his time in Cleveland.
And that's,
there'll be a Cleveland reporter there.
Yeah.
And then we'll play in. It'll give us warm and fuzzies for a little bit.
In baseball season,
he had four playoff starts for us. Yeah. He had 20 for the Yankees. One for Milwaukee that didn't go well.
That's exactly right. We will send reporters to Cooperstown to cover Tom Hamilton's speech.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And there will be a speech of CC Sabathia, and he'll mention the Cleveland part of his career because it was a nice part of his career, and we'll take that snippet and we'll make a big deal out of it.
As cheap as the media companies are today, but they might just have Tom Hamilton cover himself and CC. Then he can do the stories.
I didn't say that.
Reckless
I did not
speculation.
Say that.
I said nobody travels anymore. Nobody
was
goes
the other
anywhere.
Half of the show.
Did not even need to know what he was going to say, saw the look on his face, and got to the reckless speculation.
This isn't setting the tone. Oh, yeah, you weren't here for that Friday. That was something.
Oh, I have vidges.
There's people who really like that. But anyway, I'm sorry to go off on such a tangent there.
Where is CC?
It bothers me that you...
Kenny, can I get a power ranking from you?
Oh.
Does CC make your power ranking?
Of?
Of.
What?
Of. We're talking joy. Which Guardians players in your lifetime gave you that joy?
Oh, Judas.
Does CC even make the list?
Oh, man. No, he doesn't. He's where I got mad. I almost was like one of the callers that said I'm jumping off the ship. when they traded him to Milwaukee, I was really upset. I said we were wasting our time. I almost did what Mitch has done and become a Yankee fan. I didn't. Thank God.
That was
I was in a bad place, man. I was in a real bad place. It was ugly. And then they got Matt LaPorta, and that thing didn't work out very well.
No. That was 08, what, Victor Martinez was 2009?
Yep.
That was a rough stretch. Mark. That was really rough. That was kind of the letting everybody understand how this is going to go, how this is going to work going forward.
Mm-hmm. Here it is. It's a good job. Just killing your own sport. You took your own sport and you're drowning in a bathtub. Well done.
Does Tony make your top three?
No.
Hall of Famer.
Well, hit it again.
We got statue.
Hit it again. Doesn't matter.
We got statue. Wait, we erect statues for people that don't make Ken's top three?
Hey, it's not Ken. Ken's top three. I know I'm in the minority here.
He's got a statue.
Okay. He's still not in the top three.
Wow.
He would have been in my late mother's top three.
All
he
right,
would have been
fine.
In my late mother's top three, but mom ain't here to tell you now, is she?
And Tomi was a Cleveland baseball player.
If my mom was here to tell you right now, you know what I'd say to mom? You know what I'd say to mom?
What are you doing here?
That's what I'd say. What the hell are you doing here, mom? You've been dead for a couple years now.
Every year you use that. Still surprises me.
Didn't surprise all.
Here we go.
Hit the music again.
Powering top three things you'd say to your dead mom if she showed up right down the studio.
If mom showed up in the studio? Yeah. No. All right, let's go. Let's go. Man, I really like Kenny Lofton. Albert, Kenny... Manny.
I feel like Manny.
I'm just naming favorites.
No, I'm the same way with Manny. I'm the same way.
Everybody love Manny. Everybody love Manny. Except for the guy who was standing next to me in right field one time when I was a kid. But other than that, everybody else loved Manny. So, yeah. There you go. Larry Schmidt's going to join us later in the show. You'll find out who that is. He is the Browns fan of the year. And considering how the year went, this is an Iron Man of Browns fans. And we will talk to Larry in studio coming up at 9 o'clock. Coming up at 6:24, my friends, Ryan Day might have to call Merriman Legal. And there's a man who's the best coach in the country. And he'll tell you he is. Coming up in About Last Night.